a lot of career coaches focus on like the young and ambitious. I inspire young women to achieve, and it's like, yeah, well, what about the older women? It does seem that older people are like neglected. It's like, you know, you must be old, so you mustn't have ambition anymore. Oh, okay. I didn't know those two things went together, but anyway.
You're listening to Ambition Out Loud, the podcast for ambitious women tired of being underestimated and undervalued at work. Together, we're tackling workplace sexism, our own insecurities and self-doubt, and getting practical advice to move our careers forward. I'm your host, Nicole Magoo, and I'm an ambitious woman.
Swing. You should have seen that final show. I'm gonna go down swinging, and long after I am gone, when you hear that melody, you'll still remember me. That's how this girl is gonna carry on.
One quick editorial comment before we jump into today's show. My headset went out in the middle of the interview, so you will notice near the end that the sound quality changes a little bit. Obviously wanted to finish that interview out for you and get you all of the great things about Elise so you can follow her, but yeah, just a heads up. Elise Stevens is an experienced project delivery professional specializing in the people and process aspects of change. Elise is passionate about promoting the talents of women in project management and STEM. Her Celebrating Women in Project Management initiative has brought together a community of people showcasing the talents of women in the field of project management. Her newest best-selling book, Age-Defying Careers, helps those of us 40 and over transform into radiant and confident women so that we can ensure the next 40 years are the best years of our lives.
Congratulations on your best-selling book, Elise, and welcome to Ambition Out Loud.
Oh, thank you, Nicole. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast today. And thank you. You know, not only am I passionate about women in project management, but I do feel that women over 40 sometimes get a raw deal, especially those over 50.
Tell us more about that.
Well, I was looking around. I'm a great observer of things. And I was looking around one of the workplaces I was working at, and I noticed that there was a lot of beaten down women, and they were either struggling with, you know, the remnants of a divorce, or they were not being promoted. And in one case, they were made redundant and they didn't see it coming. And I was just thinking, oh, you know, these women seem to have had the life sucked out of them. And the people that were getting ahead in that particular organization were not the women, it was the men. And I thought, this is bad. You know, what can I do to try and help women over 40 have radiant careers, have the best career that they want?
Yeah, absolutely. Right before we started recording, you kind of made a comment about how it's almost as if over a certain age, women are no longer expected to be ambitious. Not that we were ever really given the go-ahead to be ambitious in the first place, but that the expectations get even a little bit more harsh after we hit 40. You want to tell us a little bit more about sort of how you've seen that play out?
Well, I think it's men and women. In another organization, I was working with this man who was 62, and he was having a terrible time there because he'd been bullied. But he was one of the life's great survivors, and he was attempting to get some recourse from the bullying. But his line manager gave him his quarterly performance review, and he said to him, oh, so, you know, what do you want to do? And he goes, you know, actually, I want to be CEO. And he said that she was just so taken aback that someone of his age would want to still have ambition and career growth. And I've noticed that a lot, that especially around mentoring, younger people get mentoring, older people don't. And you think, well, why is that? You know, haven't we all still got longevity in our careers to still give back? Or is this perception that we're, because we're over a certain age, that we no longer have the goods to be able to be innovative and to be forward thinking and all those type of things?
That's so ironic in some ways, because it's not often that you see super young people or people even in their 40s promoted to CEO. It's usually people that are in their 50s or 60s. There's an expectation that you don't really have the experience before that in a lot of cases. So it's interesting that even he would kind of face some of that at an age that seems primed for promotion up to the executive level.
He was just yanking her chain. He was just annoying her. But he said, well, what if I did have that kind of ambition? And what would I be doing? And it's like, no, you're old now. You're getting close to retirement. So that's kind of it. Let's just coast you through to retirement. And it's like, ugh.
Well, one of the reasons I was excited to bring you on this podcast is because I've had several listeners mention that ageism is a real challenge that women are confronting here in the US. I imagine that's also similar in Brisbane, Australia, where you're from. How are you seeing and hearing from your clients that ageism is really starting to impact their careers?
It is. The people tell me, and my clients tell me, that, you know, ageism is rife, and especially if you're looking for work. It can be very difficult to get people interested once they see you're a certain age. I don't know what it is that, you know, people think you fall off a cliff and you're no longer capable. And it is, and I think it's one of those unconscious bias things that are happening that we don't talk about, or we can talk about but, you know, never admit that that's happening. In a particular organization, I do know a manager, a line manager, spoke to one of his team and said, I'm restructuring the department and don't bother applying because I want someone younger to apply.
That's pretty blatant ageism right there.
Yeah, I know. And I love it when people go, but that's against the law. And I go, yeah, I know it's against the law. But if someone says that to you directly, What are you supposed to, how are you supposed to come back and say, well, actually, you know, Bob, that's against the law, that you, what you just said. And the unfortunate thing is that I don't think HR takes these things seriously in a lot of organizations. You know, I'm not beating up on HR people. I'm just like, what, you know, the line manager's already told you that he views you as irrelevant. No amount of being the best person you can be is going to change his view. So what are your options?
Do you think some of that, well, if one of your clients were to come to you and tell you that exact scenario, how would you kind of advise them through that situation?
I would advise them to work out what they really wanted. What is it? What were their skill set? Did they really want to continue working there? And did they have skills that were transferable into another department, another team, another organization? I know it can be challenging to move organizations when you're older, but it can be done. But it all, I think, gets back to how people perceive your skills and your contribution to the organization, rightly or wrongly. And it is just based on people's perceptions that you need to be making sure that people view your skills as being still relevant. And I think that perhaps some of this goes away. I know I'm using a lot of perhaps and maybes because it's such a personal thing. And it's such a perception thing that's not based on reality sometimes. And so I think that you really need to look at yourself and think about what are your options for moving forward and what can you do to beat this and to find a sponsor or a mentor in the organization to help you through it. It's challenging, but I think that you can do it, but you've really got to ace that confidence game and believe in your own skills and not get into other people's narratives about what they perceive you to be.
Interesting. Yeah, I think it's like so many things in life, right? Just because the challenge there doesn't mean it's insurmountable, but it does definitely make it more difficult and you have to be more intentional about how you're going to approach it.
Yeah, and I think that if we go back and think about our career plans, and there's always this perception that maybe our career plans are always about going upwards. And maybe not sideways or having a second career, but having some intention where you've got plans for your career, no matter what your age.
Yeah. Do you think, I see a couple trends, I think in the US that are maybe contributing to this problem. I'd be curious what your thoughts are on them. One is really the university trends, because a lot of people, let's say in the baby boomer generation, they would be now entering that period where it wasn't as popular for everyone to go to university when they were coming up in their 20s. And then as university became increasingly popular, now every job under the sun requires a university degree, which makes it more difficult for people in that generation to transition between roles sometimes if they can't put that they have that degree on their resume. We're finally starting to see a couple organizations and companies come back and pull back on that university requirement. But I do think that's sort of one thing that might be contributing to some of this perception of ageism. And another is just the idea that as you get older, you invest less in your growth and your skill development. What do you think about those two things?
It's interesting you bring up that university situation, because I think that that's a real country cultural thing, because I was looking at some of the skills, or talking to someone about some of the skills that you need to be a project manager. And they were very prescriptive about having a particular kind of certification and a university or postgraduate qualifications. And out here, in Australia, whilst they would like you to have university qualifications to be a project manager, if you've got a lot of work experience, then it's not so much of a big deal. So I think that sometimes, I don't know, it's really difficult. Out here, they do like you to have university qualifications for some things, but not for others. And they have a big vocational approach out here a lot of the time. And sorry, I've forgotten what the second question was.
That's great. That's definitely something we're trying to build back up, is our vocational approach. The second question was just, I think there's a perception, maybe right or wrong, I assume wrongly, but that as you get older and you get busy with life, you invest less in your skills. And so the skills you had, they sort of get dusty, right? If you're not continuously growing and learning new things. What do you think about that perception? Do you think that's accurate?
Yes, I do. Out here, especially, there's this real notion that my employer should be paying for all my skill development. And a lot of people obligate their career development to their employer, whereas we need to be taking a lot more control of where we want to go with our careers, what our career goals are, and making sure that we've got the right skills for going forward, because that is what I believe makes or breaks you from having a good long career.
That sounds like a perfect segue into sort of your book, which is called Age-Defying Careers. And you really are here to help women 40 and over through this book take control of their careers so they can keep thriving no matter what their age is. Tell us a little bit about how you help us.
So I'm a big how person. When people say, you know, random words like, oh, you know, you've got to have high emotional intelligence, or you've got to demonstrate leadership. And I'm like, well, what does that really mean? And how would I do that? And it's like, if I said to you, Nicole, well, Nicole, I think that you should invest in your skills and grow your career. And you'd be like, well, but how do I do that? What's the first thing I should be doing? So I wrote the book as a no-fluff book. It's a how-to guide on how to look at yourself, work out what your goals are, and then to deliver on those goals and review and improve it.
Yeah, and it reads a lot like a workbook in many cases. You've got lots of guided activities. One of the things that you cover is really, just like you said, helping the reader define their own personal development plan. Could you tell our listeners, sort of just assuming we don't want to make any assumptions about what their skill set or their knowledge, could you just lay it out for us? What is a personal development plan, and why is it so important for everyone to have one?
So the personal development plan is, we make plans in our lives to do a whole lot of different things, like, you know, going on holiday or renovating our house, or, you know, just general things about, you know, what we're going to be doing for the next 6 months. But I feel that we don't invest in our personal development skills that ultimately lead into what kind of career we can have. And it's a step-by-step, gentle way to working out who you are and what makes you happy and what you want, what are your dreams, and translating that into pragmatic goals that are broken down into tasks and then how to track and keep on top of those particular tasks. So I feel that it gives your aspirations that you have for your life from a work perspective, it gives it more structure and a bit more framework for you to work through. And so instead of lamenting, oh, you know, I had all these goals to do X, Y, Z, but once again, I haven't achieved them. This is like, here are my baby steps to moving forward, or here are my big steps for moving forward to achieve my dreams that I have about my work life.
Yeah, so it's very kind of tactical, it sounds like. First, you're going to walk us through, okay, what do we want our life to look like? What does thriving really mean for us at this stage in life? And then how do I actually come up with a plan to execute on that and make it happen? Is that correct?
Yep. Yes, most definitely. And that was the goal, is to take us through the journey.
We know that the work of anti-racism requires commitment to a movement, not just the moment. The Nardi Media Black Lives Matter Book Club amplifies Black voices through both fiction and nonfiction storytelling, making it easier to stay engaged and intentional about your growth in the areas of anti-racism and social justice. Book Club members looking to take their commitment a step further can add the BLM Book Club Companion Box, created by Ambition Unboxed. The Companion Box helps you put your money where your mouth is by aligning your economic power with your social values. Each box includes that month's book club pick, plus a selection of seasonal products featuring Black-owned businesses. Learn more at ambitionunboxed.com or by clicking the link in the show notes. So tell us a little bit about your own journey and what sort of inspired you to write the book, how you have used these tactics yourself in your own life and career.
When I was about to turn 50, I had a real crisis. Well, not a big crisis, but enough of a crisis to think, oh, I'm getting old. How am I still going to be relevant? People are going to think I'm old. How am I going to keep working? And so I knew I had to reinvent myself. And I thought, I'll become a project management consultant. How hard can it be? As it turns out, really hard, because there's a lot of people doing that thing. And so it was really hard to differentiate. But through my journey, through working through that particular scenario, what was I going to do for myself? I became more and more aware of women in their 40s. And I talked to other women and they'd go, oh, you know, my friend, she just got divorced. She used to work in her husband's doctor's surgery. She's got 3 kids and she's got nothing. She'll get something out of the divorce settlement, but she's got no real skills. She's over 40. She's got 3 kids. What is she going to do? How is she going to support herself? Or someone in their 60s being made redundant, not ready to retire. What is it that they do? And so it's based on my own experience, but also what's happening around my ecosystem, if you like, of women who talk to me, my own clients, and what are they going to do? And I thought that there was a lot of fluff around how important it was to have a good career or a career plan, but no one really tells you how to do that. And I felt that it was a missing piece. And it was something that I'm really passionate about, is about giving the women the tools and techniques that they need to be able to move forward with whatever they want in their careers.
Yeah, the part about being made redundant really strikes a chord with me. I work in software development a lot. And so as more machine learning and AI programs enter the market, part of their goal is to retain organizational knowledge that would otherwise leave as people at near retirement age. And part of their goal is to do, just like you said, make mundane tasks redundant so that, you know, you're freeing up people to actually do the things that computers aren't as good at doing. That's, I think, an area where we see a lot of people, at least through my consulting experience, I see a lot of people struggle kind of wanting to fight the change instead of seeing it as an opportunity to really increase their skill set. In most of those cases, actually, I can't think of a single case where the end goal was to lay people off. It was always to free up people's time so they could get to the laundry list of tasks nobody ever seemed to have the ability to tackle. What have you seen in that regard?
I do believe that those low-skill jobs are going to be disappearing in some point in the future, and that AI and robotics is going to replace them. And some organizations are being proactive about making sure that their staff are equipped for that change that's coming. But I think that there's a lot of organisations that really haven't wrapped their heads around it, but it will come. And if you have prepared yourself and prepared your career, then you're going to be ready for it. But I think that you also have to take advantage of opportunities that present themselves to you, and like going and working on a project or doing something, being seconded to another department, just getting your experience. And whilst I totally understand that it's really hard to have a family and young children and having, you know, a nice job that you can just come and do, those, I think, unfortunately, those nice jobs are the ones that are probably going to disappear.
And what do you see them being replaced with? What is sort of your feel from your consulting experience?
I think that there are going to be other jobs that come along. And I think that, you know, people crave interaction with other people. So it's never going to be, you know, they're all going to be made redundant. I think the nature of work and the types of roles is going to change. And I know I'm being a bit vague because I'm not totally sure exactly what. But I do know that if we have the skills that we need, like being adaptable and having agile thinking, having good communication skills, having good people skills, being a leader, you know, even if we're not, haven't got a leader role, but still showing good leadership qualities, then I think that they're the kind of skills that we need to make sure that we've got and that we're demonstrating and can articulate at work.
Yeah, absolutely. Those soft skills, I think, are really, like, those are the things computers are terrible at, right? So those are the things that we're going to have to rely more and more on humans to do a really stellar job with.
I agree.
What are some of the sort of red flags? You know, we've talked a lot about women in their 50s or even we've talked a little bit about people in their 60s, but you said it was really women in their 40s that sort of originally got you interested in all of this. What are some of those early warning signs or red flags people should be looking out for?
I think that if you haven't invested in your skills at all and you've been relying on what's going on at work, or you've been not taking people up on their offers at work to put you on different courses, then I think that you need to be thinking things are going to change. I think that definitely divorce and redundancy are things that you can never really see coming. And I'm not saying that we should all think that we're getting divorced at all, but I think that if you had the mindset that at some point in my career I'm going to be made redundant, and what am I going to do, is maybe a good way to approach it. It might never happen, but it's good to have a plan for that.
Yeah, I feel like that's sort of something that's always in the back of my mind and probably always has been. Not that I'm actually not up into this age group just yet, 39, so I'll be there soon. But just with the rate of pace that technology is constantly changing and evolving, you know, the things that we learned 5 and 10 years ago are already starting to become obsolete. So I think you're absolutely right. It can be exhausting if you spend too much time dwelling on it, but you have to be constantly kind of refreshing your skill set because the world is always changing.
It is. And I think that the other question you've got to ask yourself is, how long do you want to work?
Tell us more about that.
So when you're in your 40s, you're like, or in your 30s, oh, well, I got a long time to retirement. And it's like, okay, that's good, yeah. But especially in your 40s and 50s, you really need to have a plan about, well, how long do I have to work? And retirement savings, if you don't have a lot of retirement savings, then you're going to be working for a long time. And so you need to be able to make sure that you're doing something that's still bringing in the money, even though you're in your 70s and potentially your 80s. But the point I'm trying to make is that you need to think about, well, what is retirement going to look like for me, and how do I need to plan for that? Or how much longer, what kind of career do I want in my 50s and 60s? And it's going to change. But I think that, you know, instead of just wishing and hoping that everything's going to work out okay, I think that you do need to have some kind of high-level plan. You don't have to go down to the nitty-gritty, but I do think that it's important to have some thought about, well, what are my plans for going forward? And the thing is that skill development takes a little while to do. So unfortunately, you can't be 65 and then go, well, actually, I want to work till I'm 80. But how are you going to do that? And so that's why being relevant and having a career, you're going to probably have a couple of careers now, not just one. But you need to be thinking about, well, how long realistically do I think that I'm going to be working? Well, you know, probably going to be working till I'm 70. Okay, so then I need to have something that's relatively future-proof and not reliant on people thinking that I'm a good person or something. And so you need to be thinking about, well, what is my second kind of career going to be, or my third, and how can I make that happen and plan for that?
Do you find that people approach sort of that second or third career with excitement or anxiety?
Oh, all of it. All of the emotions. Because people are thrust into it. And you see people being made redundant and they're like, well, what am I going to do? And it's like, well, you need to have a plan, another plan in case you are being redundant. We were talking about this previously about, you know, having a plan for if you get made redundant. But, you know, I don't think that people do have a plan about what it's going to really be like. As well, take being a nurse. You know, you might be able to be 30 years working as a nurse, and that puts you, what, mid-50s, late-50s, but you mightn't be ready to retire, but the job is physically demanding and you can't do it anymore. So, you know, what do you transition to?
That's a great point. It seems like a lot of this conversation is really around maintaining in some regards, right? I don't want to be made redundant. I want to make sure that my career at least stays at its current level. What about those people that are still ambitious and want to continue to climb well into their 50s and 60s? How does a career plan look slightly different for them?
Well, I don't think the career plan does look the approach that you do to how you have your career plan. But I think that your goals are different. Your goals are, well, how can I continue to achieve the high standard of goals that I have, and growing my career in an organization or in another organization, what can I do to be able to do this? And it's the same type of thing, but I think that you're looking at it a lot more proactively.
So does that mean you're doing things like bringing in career coaches or like an executive coach? What might be slightly more proactive?
Yeah, I think that if you're looking to still be having very high goals of yourself in your 50s and 60s, then you've got an extensive network. You would be getting some kind of career coaching, executive coaching, and you would potentially looking at setting up your own side hustle or doing some kind of consulting or joining some other group of people that you know. I know that they're kind of very specific, but I think that you've got it. You know, are you looking to continue in your current plan, or are you going to be pivoting into something else, like being a gin distiller or something like that? And it's just different kind of ambition. Instead of climbing the corporate ladder, which you might still be interested in, you've got to maybe be doing something else.
What does that look like for people that are wanting to transition to maybe a second career? Is, you know, a lot of times when you start on your first career, you're in your early 20s, you might get an internship or two to kind of get your feet wet. How do you go about starting at the bottom when you're already halfway through, you know, a career lifespan?
You might not have to start at the bottom. You might be able to pivot into what you do. But that can be quite challenging, because getting employers to think about whether you've got potential to be able to do that or not, or why is this person trying to pivot into a nursing role when they've already got all this experience doing something else. And I think that it's the relationships that you have with people in your network that can allow you to do that. It can be challenging, but it can be done. But I think that you need to be very clear about what the steps are and how that you can do it. And I think that it's such a career-specific thing that you need to have a plan and to investigate and analyze what's really required and how you might be able to do that.
Do you think there are certain careers where
it's just not, it's not worth it. You've kind of already reached the point at which there's enough time left in your career to make that transition? Or would you be someone that says you're never too old to try something new if you've got a good plan in place?
Unfortunately, I think that there are certain careers that once you get to a certain age that are no longer viable. And it's like studying medicine, you know, in your 50s, it's not viable because it takes so long. And at least out here, there's an, in here in Australia, there's an age limit on when you can go to university, I think, is my understanding. But you got to look at how long it's going to take you to be proficient. But you also need to have a look at what it is that you want to actually achieve out of that. What is the burning desire? What is your goal in that particular endeavor that you want to achieve? And so then you just need to think about, is there another way that I can achieve that goal, and look at the different alternate paths that might be available?
Could you give us an example of something like that?
Say you were thinking about, I'm interested in becoming a teacher, okay? And why do I want to become a teacher? Because I enjoy sharing my knowledge and inspiring young people to achieve, okay? But then when you start looking into the academic requirements, oh, yeah, it's 3 years, but then you're unlikely to get a teaching job in a major capital city. You know, my life is in a regional centre. So once, but maybe there's other ways that you can inspire young people to achieve. Maybe there are other careers that are open to you, like a social worker or a teaching assistant, or, you know, different things that maybe are open. I hope that's too not too wishy-washy.
Got it. So look for the kind of essence of that job and see where you can find it in other similar type roles.
Yeah, exactly. And then look at what qualifications and experience and see if it's achievable and it's within your current bandwidth to do that. And if it is, then, you know, good. If it's not, then can I make changes to do that? Or maybe I need to find something a little bit different.
Gotcha. Hey, do you guys remember Marsha from the Accidentally Ambitious episode in season one? Well, her Hideaways has launched and I've got her back to tell you a little bit about it. This is something I believe in so much, I had to go ahead and become a subscriber right away. So Marsha, tell me about how many points I have built up and what I can expect to get out of them.
First off, I wanted to thank you so much for being our first ever package purchaser. And then you are our second subscriber. So thank you so much for supporting my small business and supporting you by subscribing. You have 3,300 points, as you know, but your listeners may not know. With points, you can use them either for a night stay. You can have a chef come and prepare a meal with you. You can actually have them prepare the meal for you. You can have an on-site massage like you did during your first Hideaway. Or you could get a manicure or pedicure in town with one of our approved vendors.
I have to say, right now, Nicole, I'm really excited that I made that decision to become a subscriber, because I just know that, like, with all this time spent with my kids during the pandemic, I cannot wait to get out of my house and have, like, a little bit of alone mom time to, like, clear my head and think and, yeah, all the things. I can't wait. So I got to book that with you, because clearly the whole point of, like, set it and forget it, self-care staycations, is that I got to take advantage of the points. So that's happening very soon.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I love about the subscription, is that even if you can't foresee in the immediate future of doing a Hideaway, you're building every single month. You're getting that automatic debit come out, and that gets you 600 points. It's $57 for 600 points. And then you're building. Do you have anything to offer your listeners, Nicole?
Absolutely. If they use the code AMBITIONOUTLOUD, we'll hook them up with a discount.
Yep. You are our first affiliate, and we are so excited to have it where you are rewarding your listeners with something that will really help them unwind, relax, be taken care of, not take care of themselves, because we take care of everything for them. That's the whole point of Her Hideaways. So thank you so much, Nicole, for being such a raving fan of you. We appreciate you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Do it, ladies. You need it. I know at least Not everywhere, but in some states here in the United States, there are career transition programs. So I know one specifically because a friend's mom did this a while back. People coming out of tech careers, there was an accelerated program to get your teaching license if you wanted to move into becoming a teacher. So instead of going back through the same university track everyone else did, then they'd do this sort of like career transition program to come out certified to teach. Are there other things like that people should be thinking of or looking for?
Oh, most definitely. Look for all the free stuff you can get. Look at industry associations and professional organizations to see what's available to help you do this, to help you with the transition. But I also think that engaging someone like a career coach, as long as they fit you, is going to work. But I do notice, which is another reason I wrote the book, is that a lot of career coaches focus on like the young and ambitious. I inspire young women to achieve. And it's like, yeah, well, what about the older women?
So we're getting ambition age discrimination from both the work and the mentoring side. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. If you do a look on a search, because I've done some investigation about who offers what, not for a little while, but it does seem that older people are like neglected. It's like, you know, you must be old, so you mustn't have ambition anymore. Oh, okay. I didn't know those two things went together, but anyway. And so there's a real gap, I feel, in even in coaches that are available to help people have a second career. I think that there's a few people offering that whole pivot transition space, but definitely, you know, people are like, yes, I help women under 35 have the careers they want. And it's like, what about women over 35? What, do you suddenly go off the precipice and go, yeah, I don't have a career anymore?
So it's interesting. What role do you think this plays in sort of the glass ceiling? Because we have a whole bunch of women, almost, you know, from what I've seen statistics-wise, this tends to happen. The U.S. is particularly bad about it, but it's not necessarily not a problem in other countries of the world yet either, where you get a whole bunch of women that hit middle management and they really have a hard time pushing through to the VP and the executive roles within a company. But you're also saying that once you hit that position age-wise, you're probably lining up at a spot where there's fewer people lining up to mentor and sponsor and advocate for you. That seems like a pretty big challenge right there.
It is. Oh, it's the same out here, that we don't have enough women on boards. It's, you know, they're still not good gender balance at the executive level, and it's, you know, it's hard to find. And we've also got this queen bee thing going on where other women don't support other women. So I think that, you know, mixing it all up, but you look around your organization and see how many women in their 50s and 60s are still there, and it's like, well, where are they? Where are all the women? Where are all the women? Where did they go? Were they ever there?
Do you have any answers to that? Do you have a theory?
I don't know. I think some of it has to do with what society was like. So when I left school, I went to university and did an electrical engineering degree. Okay. I've met other women of my age, and they have, you know, I consider them very intelligent. But one woman told me that, yeah, at 16, her father told her that she had to go to work as a secretary. And it's like, so that's, maybe there was a whole lot that didn't go to university and have corporate careers, or they had corporate careers and then they left to have children and they didn't come back to work, or I don't know. It's really difficult. And once you get to women in their 60s, they're not there either. I know, it's rather depressing, isn't it? But I don't know where they went. I think that, I don't know, they're missing. There's men in their 50s and 60s, but I don't know where the women went or if they were even there.
Interesting. I've noticed one thing more and more over the last couple of years as I talk to more women is that a lot of them just sort of reach a point, I think, of frustration where they're tired of feeling like they're beating their head against the wall. And so they do, like you said, they start a side hustle and then eventually move into full-time entrepreneurship or small business ownership or something else where they at least feel like their ability to succeed or fail is on their own terms. Are you seeing any of that?
Yeah, almost definitely. And I was talking to someone that was quite senior in local government, and she said that she just got sick of dealing with the boys' club, and so just left or got made redundant, or they came to her contract wasn't renewed or something. And I think that there's a lot of that just women just are like, yeah, I can't be bothered with this. And it is having a side hustle and knowing that you're not dependent upon others. It's not for everyone, don't get me wrong. It gives you a bit more latitude to explore what kind of career you want and what you want to do.
I've heard this term used for that. I don't know where this originated from, so I'm sorry to whoever the credit belongs to, but called kind of like economic refugees. You know, there's this group of women that feels like they're being pushed out of the workplace, or they're, you know, if they're not intentionally being pushed out, they're just kind of throwing their hands up and saying, this is a losing battle. This is crazy. I'm not going to keep doing this anymore. I guess what I find hopeful about that is at least then we have a new generation of businesses coming online where the rules can be different. And hopefully we can get more and more of those businesses to be successful, because, you know, where the money flows, the power will eventually start to rebalance. Are you seeing any progress or signs of optimism?
Oh, yeah. I think that if you can do it, if you can make it all work and get successful, then, yeah, you can reinvent your career and what work means for you. And I think that that is something that you can do at any age. But I think that it takes a long time, and there is no such thing as overnight success. But I think that it is really important to when things, you know, what's the term for stupidity, you know, doing the same thing over and over again and not making any change. And I think that in organisations and in your career, you've got to be pretty realistic about what is your future career growth in particular organisations, and what are your options for moving forward. And it gets back to that, well, how long do I want to be working, and what do I want from work in my 40s, 50s and 60s? And, you know, that is going to change.
So one of the other things that I think women need to be thinking about a little bit as they get older, again, I'm going to let you represent the Australian side of this equation, but at least here in the US, there's lots of studies that now show that the gender pay gap actually widens within women as they get older. So the American Association of University Women has shown that between the ages of 55 and 64, your wage gap will be twice what it was when you were a woman between the ages of 20 and 24. Is that something you guys are seeing as well? And how do women minimize this growing wage gap effect within their careers?
I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised. And I think once again, you need to be thinking about what's my plan? How am I going to remain relevant? How am I going to have the career I want? And to try and minimize it, have a plan for how to deal with it. Because I think it gets back to that overall question about, I still need to be visible within the organization. I still need to be working on making sure my skills are relevant. I still need to be making sure I'm working on projects that bringing about transformational change, that I'm open and displaying all those characteristics that employers want. But it's also important to be working for someone that is a good leader. And if you're not working for someone that's a good leader, then maneuvering yourself to work for someone, being quite tactical about who you work for, because a bad leader is always going to be a bad leader. And I think things like that contribute to that wage gap.
So just one last thing so that we can let everyone know about your first book as well. So you also did a book earlier on your campaign around celebrating women in project management, and one of the women you happen to feature in your first book, which is called Unlocking Opportunity. Can you tell us just a little bit quickly about what inspired that first campaign and book?
Well, I felt that women in project management don't have as much visibility as men, and they're not on podcasts and they're not speaking at events. You know, things are changing and it is getting better, but they're still not 50-50. And so a couple of years ago, I wanted to provide a platform to promote women in project management and their achievements. So this is the third year, 2020 is the third year that it's been running, and I was organized so that I could develop an ebook for it. And so just with all the profiles of all the fabulous women. And I also have got a hard copy of it now. So I'm really pleased to be able to have something that people can use to really get insight and knowledge from all these fabulous women.
Yeah, it's great. And I've seen, you've done that a couple of years now. I love seeing how it continues to grow and become more international each year you run it. It's been really fun to watch it sort of develop in that way and see all these women coming out of the woodwork from around the world that are so active and involved in project management.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to be able to do something that is positive.
Absolutely. And it really does do a beautiful job of showcasing all of the talents and the skills that women bring to the field.
I'm really pleased to be able to do that. And it's fabulous to be able to showcase women that way.
All right, Elise. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Before we let you go, do you mind letting our listeners know where they can find you on the internet and learn more about you?
Oh, yeah. I have my own website, which is www.elisestevens.co. And of course, find me on LinkedIn and love to connect.
Perfect. And I believe you also have your own podcast as well. If our listeners want to go check it out, what's it called?
Future Proof Your Career.
Perfect. So they can take the conversation we started today and dive into it a little bit deeper.
Yeah. Thank you, Nicole. It's been wonderful talking with you.
Thank you so much, Elise.
That's our episode for today. Thank you so much for spending the time with us. If you found today's episode helpful, please pull out your phone and share the link with one or two friends that would also benefit from hearing it. If you really loved it, please leave a review in iTunes to help others find the podcast. Itching to meet other ambitious women? Connect with members of our community online at the Ambition Unboxed Facebook group. Ambition Out Loud is produced by Cultivate Inc. LLC. This episode was edited by our new editor, Kristen Sullivan. Welcome to the team, Kristen. Today's music is by Steve Rice Music. New episodes will be available every other week. Until next time, remember, your ambition is a beautiful thing.
I'm gonna go down swinging. There'll be a tale to tell. Like a boxer in the ring, I'll give my everything. Until I hear that final bell, well, I'm gonna go down swinging, whether I'm right or wrong. I know without a doubt, until the lights go out.